listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
Welcome to the 76th installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. My business partner, Doug Geveller, and I co-host this business talk show, which airs every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m. Our goal for this show is to help business owners and top executives make better, more informed decisions. And we do that here on the radio show by interviewing thought leaders and executives who have transferable knowledge and ideas. Our radio show is truly an extension of our 16-year business practice, where we build executive forums for top executives and business owners here in Orange County, California. Doug and I do this under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums, and Doug and I currently lead multiple CEO peer groups. We offer a differentiated experience for executives and business owners because our research shows that 80% of the issues and opportunities that a top executive faces are really common with other top executives who are leading similarly sized firms. Recently, my book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, has been called the definitive guide to the CEO peer group experience. And it's available for sale on Amazon.com. Simply go to Amazon.com, type in Rick Franzi or Critical Mass, and up will come the book. If you would like to learn more about the services and the business practice that Doug and I lead here in Orange County, I would encourage you to check out our website. That website is Critical Mass for Business, and the four is spelled F-O-R. So it's Critical Mass for Business, and it will talk to you on that website about the variety of services that we offer to the business community here in Orange County, California. As I said in the open, we really want our audience to make better, more informed decisions by the interviews that we do with thought leaders and executives. And one of those executives that we have the pleasure of having on the show today is Stephen Rabigo. Stephen is the CEO of Zimple Money, and we're going to be talking with him today how his firm, Zimple Money, makes it easy to manage and track loan agreements and to do that online. I'm excited to have Stephen on our show because he and his firm are creating a new service offering through the use of flexible technology platforms. These enable individuals and businesses to manage small or large loan portfolios. So, Stephen, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Hi, Rick. How are you today?
I am fine, sir. Thank you for spending the time with our audience to talk about your company and your business. Let's get right to it. Stephen, could you tell our audience a bit about your path to Zimple Money?
Sure. I actually started my career in the commercial banking industry. Spent about 10 years making loans and running banks, and then moved into doing financial consulting for about 20 years. And then after that experience, I wanted to get into an operating company and started an operating company, a technology company, back in 2001. And I sold an interest in that company in 2008. And going through my sort of transitioning process, I began thinking about what new business I ought to be getting into. And it had to do with a variety of filters that I was targeting. You know, I wanted to serve consumer markets. I love the idea of being able to provide services online using the internet. I love the idea of subscription models. And so I started looking at those things, wanted to have something very scalable. And then began to hone in on these financial services products, some of which used to exist in paper back 20 years ago when I was in the banking industry, but over time have fallen by the wayside.
And that's going to lead us into a conversation about Zimple Money, and I want to hold that thought for a second, because as you were talking to us about your career, you said an interesting couple words, which was you started a technology firm in 2001. Can you take the audience back to the climate for a technology company in 2001? You're to be commended, in my opinion, for doing that and being successful at it, where you had an exit in 2008. But what was the climate like for a technology company back in 2001?
Well, as you can imagine, you know, it was right at the end of the bubble for the internet. So there have been a lot of companies that had funded millions and millions of dollars. We are at a time when the stock market was plummeting. And it was a very, very difficult time to start anything at that point. we weren't the first movers in the industry. We were really a 12th mover kind of a company. And so it was difficult in the early days, both to convince people that we had a product that could be used, because we were still, in the evangelical stage of the business cycle, and yet had great success. Again, it was very similar to what we're doing today. It was a subscriber model. It was a SaaS over the internet. At the time, everything was called online. You know, the words have evolved to a variety of things, now oftentimes referred to as cloud computing, but we were one of the early companies providing services via the internet or cloud computing environment. So tough time at that point in our lifetime. And then my exit in 2008, that business continues to grow and double every year in sales. And so although the marketplace was really getting hammered, we didn't really have a hard time identifying a potential buyer for my stake in the business.
Excellent. You know, we have a range of demographics in our listening audience, and for every show, we're not quite sure where that demographic is, but I can say with a certain amount of certainty that there are members of our listening audience who may be on the sidelines with a business idea, you know, coming out of what we just came out of relative to the economy for the past couple of years, may not feel like it's the right time to launch the business. But your example of what you did with that firm in 2001, the reason I wanted to spend a little bit more time with you sharing about it, Stephen, is that if the business model is right for you and you believe in the idea, you can wait forever for the ideal time to bring the product to market and to birth the company. Sometimes you just got to go regardless of what the macroeconomics and what the climate may look like for your idea.
No, absolutely. I think it's like children to some degree. You know, there's never a perfect time, but when you have it and when you get started, it's the best time. So, I mean, businesses, again, starting a business in 2008 hasn't been a rosy experience either. So if you want to pick cycles, it's always better to start at the low point in the cycle as opposed to the peak. So, again, maybe there's some lesson learned there.
Excellent. So let's talk to the audience a bit about Zimple Money to help them understand what it is that your firm does and services that you offer.
Well, let me describe it in a very broad view, because I always say we do four things. We send out bills, we collect payments, we post ledgers, and we distribute deposits to the beneficiaries of those contracts. So that being said, we're a peer-to-peer banking and financial services company and platform. And essentially what we do is we allow people to manage financial agreements between private parties online. That activity used to happen in the banking industry, but as people and services changed in that marketplace, it went away. So the kinds of things that we're doing is we're managing loans, we're managing leases, we're managing rents and non-owner-occupied property tenants and borrowing and that type of thing. And even things is like divorce settlements and other insurance settlements, anywhere where there's a transaction of a payment from one person to another, and it has to be posted on some sort of a ledger to be tracked in that environment. Those are the kinds of transactions that we're doing.
And you're leveraging technology to do that. So can you help me to understand, and the audience as well, what the advantages of that model are versus maybe other options that they would have?
Well, the advantage for the consumer in this option is, the paperwork associated with sending a bill, collecting a payment, posting a ledger, and making the deposit at the bank. We've essentially automated that entire function. And in automating that function, we've taken it out of the realm of having to even go on and write a check. All those things can be handled automatically, depending on the level determined by each of the contract and parties. So if I was a borrower, I could either choose to make a payment on the 5th of every month, or I could choose to come into the Zimple Money network and make a payment on the 2nd or the 3rd or the 4th or the 5th, the day that I choose to do so. So it's that flexibility and that accountability that we've created.
And we're going to come back a little bit later in the interview and sort of talk some more about engaging the consumer market and some of the market segments that you've been successful in. So I know the audience is probably interested in learning more about that. I would like to ask you a question, you know, relating to, of all the experiences that you've had in starting and growing companies and being in the technology sector, et cetera, is there a key lesson learned that you use to lead Simple Money?
Well, you know, I think that the idea of any kind of startup or early stage company, the challenge is to start selling services sooner than later. I know there's so many businesses that, you know, spend an awful lot of time building product without ever getting it into the hands of a user because it's not perfect. And I think that that's one of the lessons that we learned both at Telegis and clearly here at Simple Money is that the sooner that you get a product into the hands of the consumer, the better you're going to be able to meet their requirements. We always have a good idea of what we think a consumer wants, but until they actually start using it, you never know for sure. So I think that that's a lesson that's important. Get the product into the hands of users and get them to test, and I say this word carefully, test the product. It's got to work, clearly, but you want to get it in their hands so that they can make the enhancements that will make it attractive to other buyers of the product. And then when you're doing that, you're essentially proving up your model. As you get customers using the product, the question is often asked if you're raising money is do you have customers? Do you have revenues? And clearly, even if you're in that beta stage, if you can drive revenue, it's an important step to take.
Yeah,
I think the other thing that's really important is to understand the basic workflow of the service that you're providing. Understand what the needs, it's kind of a silly comment, but you understand the needs of your customer. If you don't understand what they need and you don't understand their normal workflow processes, you'll never be able to make an improvement. So, again, a lot of that market research, in my mind, is really, really important, understanding the flow from step one through the final step of that process to facilitate something that would be useful for your customer. And then if you're in the pioneering business, as we've been a couple of times, in Simple Money in a prior business, I think it really takes time to get people to understand that and try a new method of solving a problem. Anytime people are asked to make a change, particularly if it's from a vendor, it's going to be a little steeper hill than just providing another widget. So even if there are a lot of products in the marketplace, if you can deliver something that's solving a problem that a consumer has, a customer has that's unique and different, it's going to take a little time to make that happen. And if you're consistent in the delivery of that product and it works, there'll be customers for a long time.
Well, you certainly gave us a litany of good ideas in that answer, and I appreciate it, Stephen. Clearly, in today's investment environment, showing revenue and clients is key to being able to attract additional funding. You made that point. And a point that you made earlier, which I think is truly powerful, is until the product is in the hands of the client, and it can be a software, cloud computing-based product, or it can be a widget that's actually something they implement in their, in their process, until they have application and use it, you don't really know where the other areas for improvement in the product are. So I think the points that you talked about there are definitely transferable to a lot of different businesses, not just technology and startups and companies that are in your space, but in a variety of different areas. So, and it's proven by the success that you've had with the companies that you've built. So thanks for sharing that with our audience.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's talk about potential clients, because that's key. You talked about getting products in their hands and generating revenue. So can you talk to us about what you and your firm, Simple Money, are doing to address your potential clients?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and it's something that we think about all the time. It's important, we're a relatively small startup company. We have not been backed by venture capitalists at this point. It's all self-funded. And what we've done, and I think it's important for other people to think about this as a strategy, is to affiliate themselves with other companies that are doing providing services for the same type of customer, and be able to affiliate yourself with that group to benefit from sort of the halo of their relationship. The most specific way I can describe that is we're working with a company up in the Bay Area that is a social cause-based social network. And we're working with them to provide a product that they can distribute and offer to their customer base. And with their existing 12 million members in their organization. Now, we wouldn't ever be able to reach 12 million people on the budget that we have for sales and marketing dedicated to that. But by partnering with them, we expose ourselves to 12 million people. Plus, we have an opportunity to have the halo effect of that organization who is trusted in the eyes of their customers. So it's a tremendous benefit for us, and we look for opportunities in the consumer marketplace where we can both benefit from that credibility halo that they bring to the table, as well as the exposure that they have to their existing sales and distribution channels.
Interesting.
We're also doing a project in the automotive industry. That particular product line is called Zimple Auto. It's a business-to-consumer product, so it's a little bit different than what we're doing in the Zimple Money application. And essentially, it's the same approach. We've affiliated with other people who are providing services to auto dealers all over the country who have a need for software applications to manage loan portfolios that they make themselves. And we facilitate that. So, again, by virtue of their relationship with their customers, we can get a halo effect and go into a vertical market that is beneficial for us as well. So it's that those are the two main things that we're doing directly. And then more indirectly, we spend a lot of time doing social media and trying to do affiliate strategies associated with online social networks, blogging, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the variety of ways. So we're out there trying to become thought leaders in particularly in the peer-to-peer financial services marketplace, peer-to-peer banking marketplace.
Just one quick follow-up question. You brought up social media, Stephen, and on this show we have interviewed people who have expertise in this area, and I'm always intrigued by business owners and CEOs and CEOs in your case who are looking at social media as an avenue to, you know, to attract clients. Are you comfortable? Can I ask you, what's your initial experience in the work that you're doing in the area of kind of social media to indirectly attract?
Well, I think the main thing that we're doing is, you know, we're active participants on blogs that are focused to our peer-to-peer financial services vertical. So when we, you know, what we're experiencing so far is that if we get comments that are picked up by the trade or picked up by other blog people, you know, that are out there that are active, we see spikes in our activity on our website. And so to me, it's a lot of it is about brand building. We don't have a direct product that's necessarily purchased off the website like a product per se, but we clearly see activity that's driven to our site when we're covered by a particular blogger or by an industry expert. So we try to, you know, communicate with those folks. We try to engage with them in their active blogging activity, again, so that they become comfortable with us as a company and us as people or an organization. And that's essentially what we're doing in that arena. Again, a lot of effort, a lot of consistent, methodical being out there, I think, is what's important. And even if you pick one thing to do every day, you got to do it in order to get the exposure.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about a current unresolved challenge that Zimple Money, you and the executive team may be dealing with right now. Or if you're comfortable, let's just spend a couple minutes and have you describe what are, you know, unresolved challenge or challenges that you're working through and share that with the audience.
Well, the biggest one that we have as an early stage company is really getting access to capital is probably our biggest issue today. To the degree that we're self-funded, we can only grow the company accordingly because there is a limit to the pocketbook that I have available to open up. And I think that that's sort of the always for an early stage company. It's really critical that the most important thing that happens is that whatever you do, you get to a cash flow break even as quickly as you can. And if you can do that, you're always going to be better off in the future. So our point, our biggest issue is making sure that we can find a venture firm or an angel round of investment that's sufficient to allow us to get to a point where we're at a break even at a level where we have enough staffing to grow the business. We can build the company today, but it's the issue of bringing in competent salespeople, marketing people, software developers, product managers, all the sort of and sundry folks that are necessary to run the business as it grows. So that's probably the first thing. Getting customers to try something that's new and different is a big challenge. Again, we're providing a product to customers who have never, in many cases, used anything but an Excel spreadsheet and a pencil to figure out who owed them money and when it was due. So we're getting people into the notion of being able to use an online system. In many cases, it's new for them to look at that as a vehicle to send a bill, collect a payment, and keep do the internal accounting. I think the other thing that we have, the third thing, is probably just finding really great people to join the organization. It's a challenge when you're a small company, and it's a challenge when you're well-financed and growing, because there's the best people that you can find are always employed, they're always doing something else, they're always being challenged by their employer, and they probably don't want to leave. So finding good people that will join you is, I think, a tremendous challenge for all executives. And then, again, this is sort of a small or an enterprise business issue when, you know, prior to funding, when you're doing it on a shoestring, is balancing, you know, how much resource you put into sales versus how much you put into development, because both of them are critical to a technology company in growing. You can't grow without sales, and you can't grow without having good development or good software for people to use. So that's always a challenge, and I think that that's one of the most important things, that if you get wrong, if you have too many people selling a product that doesn't really work, it's not going to work. And if you have a great product but nobody's selling, you're going to be out of business. So I think those are probably the four items. Again, capital, access to capital, getting customers to try something new, finding really great people, and then balancing sales and development as you're growing your business.
I used to work for a president of a division who had a sales background, and invariably when you say, "Jerry, how are you today?" his answer was always, I'm fine, but whatever issues I have could be solved with a couple more sales." Which of the four things that you talked about, and I'm probably not doing him justice in retelling the story, he had much more energy behind it than I just delivered it with, but I wanted to focus in maybe on getting consumers and customers of those, you know, to try something new and different. Can you talk to us about what, for your business, Simple Money, is working in getting pure consumers into your business model and as clients?
Yeah, I think what we're finding that's working is, you know, we do point-and-click advertising. So that's one way we're getting consumers in. That doesn't really take into effect, or that doesn't really take into consideration the sort of leveraged brand relationship with partners, but that's clearly a way people are finding us. We are, again, doing the approaching consumers by using affiliated relationships, leveraging the positive relationship that a partner has with a target audience. That continues to work. And again, it's a function of not only getting a customer, but it's exposing our brand to a variety of other people who may or may not be customers of our product today. And I'll just, again, go back to touching on the examples of that I think I mentioned. Actually, I didn't mention, but I will. The people we're working with is a company in the automotive group called Credit Smarts out in Ontario, California. The cause-based organization is Care2 up in the Bay Area, And then we're working with Starbucks and Whole Foods and a variety of other companies like that in order to bring products and services that they can use to engage their customers at a much higher level as well. So we're finding the affiliation approach is really an important way for us to get into the marketplace, plus the old sort of, if you call it old-fashioned, but point-and-click advertising via the Internet.
Yeah, when you talk about technology, old-fashioned doesn't have to be very old, does it? Feel like it's been around for a long time. It gets accepted so quickly and, you know, becomes so pervasive. You know, that's interesting because being a small company that's growing and having a consumer opportunity is very exciting, but it's sort of like how do you attack the elephant, right? How do you get that? And you can spend a lot of money trying to create awareness and maybe at the end of the day not get the results that you had expected. So I appreciate you explaining to our listening audience how you're using affiliate programs and working with firms that have that help your brand through association. So I think, again, talking about kind of a learning moment, reinforcing that point and answering this question is very helpful. So thank you, Stephen. I'd like to ask if there's anything else about Zimple Money or you that we've not had a chance to talk today about in your interview that you would like to mention.
Yeah, you know, I actually would. Nothing really about me, but one of the reasons we started the company was because we found that there was a little niche in the IRS tax code that was called a program-related investment. And a program-related investment is essentially a loan from a charitable trust that can be made to a nonprofit organization can be applied similar to a corpus contribution on behalf of the trust, which essentially means a trust has to make a grant of at least 5% of their capital every year. But if you actually make it as a loan to a nonprofit organization, the IRS says that's okay, and we'll apply that to your minimum 5% requirement. So what we found was that there was a lot of nonprofits, a lot of charitable trusts that could leverage their 95% of their portfolio by using it to loan money to the same sort of mission-based organizations that they're supporting with their 5% of their annual contribution. And this little niche in the marketplace is something that's really near and dear to my heart. And we're working with the PRI Makers Network up in the Seattle area to actually facilitate some of this financing from trusts into nonprofits that have a borrowing requirement. So we're really, that's one of the things that we knew that was out there that we thought was pretty exciting. It's not a huge marketplace for it because, number one, you need a charitable trust to start with. And the trusts that we've usually run across have fairly limited staff in order to manage and do these loans. And that's why we are getting involved with PRI Makers Network up in Seattle, again, an affiliate that we can work with in order to educate charitable trusts and show them what a program-related investment is and how it can enhance their portfolio and enhance their mission based on making those types of investments in some of the companies that they would normally be granting funds to. So that's pretty exciting for us.
And I appreciate you sharing it with us today here on the interview. How does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm, Zimple Money?
Best way to get a hold of Zimple Money is on the Internet. At www.zimplemoney, and that's Z like zebra, ZIMPLEMONEY.com. My email address is very simple. It's Steve with an S, TEVE dot Rabago, RABAGO at ZimpleMoney.com, or call us toll free at 877, the number 4, Zimple, which is 877-494-6753.
Well, Stephen, I've enjoyed the time that we've spent together today. I appreciate the amount of information and knowledge that you've been willing to share with our listening audience.
Thanks,
and
Rick.
I look forward to following Zimple Money and as you grow and expand the firm here in Orange County, California, and points points outside of Orange County. So thank you for your time both today here on the show and in preparing to be on the show.
Thank you, Rick, and my best to Doug, too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. That was Stephen Rabigeau, who is CEO of Zimple Money, I appreciate the time that he's taken to share with us. As you know, our listening audience, Doug and I are always searching out and scouring Orange County, California for business leaders who we consider to be thought leaders in an area and bringing them onto the show so that they can share with you, our listening audience, some of what they know and have put into practice. And I clearly believe the interview we just concluded with Stephen falls in that category very strongly. So Doug and I believe that business owners and executives do learn best from the experiences of their peers, as evidenced by that thoughtful conversation we just concluded. And I believe you'll agree that each week here on Critical Mass, the radio show, we endeavor to bring a spotlight on people who can transfer some of their experience. We see this happen every month in our executive forums that Doug and I facilitate, and the opportunity for our members to be in the same room with 10 other top executives, many of whom own their businesses, can have a significant positive impact on the quality of the decisions that our members make. Excuse me. Tomorrow, Doug will be hosting the show, and I'm excited that he will be talking with Kimberly Kovacs of Option Ease. And so if you're available to listen to the show live, I encourage you to do that at 4 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Until I talk to you again, here's hoping that all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net.